Okay, so I've got friends who I invite, and so let me just explain how this friendship with my next guest works. Is I don't like to bother people. I really don't like to bother people. It's the introvert in me. It's like, look, I'm doing this conference again. You come every year. You don't have to come this year. You should spend time with your family. And then he's the same way. He's like, no, I should come. I should like rearrange my entire life to try to be there. I'm like, no. And so then we go back and forth. We make each other feel guilty, and inevitably he comes, thank goodness. And then he's got to take a road trip afterwards, having abandoned his wife and children to the Texas heat. When I say I have friends in politics, and they're friends. Like we chat, and we chat about non-political stuff. I've only got one friend in politics who routinely texts my wife and says, hit him. And that happens to be my next guest, who causes all sorts of abuse in my marriage because my wife, Laurel, has the opportunities to hit me when Congressman Chip Roy texts her and says to do so over various little things like my detesting of sweet tea, which he hates that I don't, it's sweet tea's gross. But nonetheless, that's not for the discussion today. So I want to introduce to you genuinely a good friend, a prayer warrior for my family, just an all-around good guy who really does live his convictions every day. You heard Congressman Hearn talk about him yesterday, his love for Texas and people and their love for him, even though they may not always agree with him because of his passion and his convictions. My friend Chip Roy, the congressman from Texas. Wow. Dude. Pop-Tarts. But they're the fruit ones. Wow.
Had to be done.
Shame me.
Had to be done.
On stage. You're the reason I even got into golf, and now I nearly get killed with golf with Gunner. So,
hey,
yeah,
man.
So he's a very good golfer, by the way.
I was back in the day. You know, I played for 40 years, played in college. I taught golf camp, taught kids, played in an event a month ago. I'd never been hit. Guy shanked one, hit me right square in the chest, just like a month ago.
Oh, geez.
And, yeah.
Wow. Okay. So among the many things that you and I could talk about, we have a shared frustration with Republicans taking power and Washington continuing to grow.
Yeah.
How often do you just feel like this isn't a winnable fight?
So, well, first of all, good to be here. Thank you all for being here and supporting Eric. And Erica, as he said, we've been good friends now for two decades. This is an important gathering. And that's, to me, that this is, you know, one of, there are a number of really important questions right now that we face, but this is one of the most important. And Republicans have for too long been a part of the problem and driving the very things that they criticize and campaign against. And I saw that when I was a lawyer on the Judiciary Committee, when I was Ted Cruz's chief of staff. I saw that now in my 5 years in Congress. And with all due respect to our Republican colleagues, people get mad at me when I say this 2 months out from an election. Like, look, so be clear. Everybody go vote Republican. Let's get the most conservative candidate you can get elected. But I'm concerned about January 3rd when we get sworn in. I'm concerned about January 20th, 21st when we get to, down to doing business. And the fact of the matter is, too many Republicans give lip service to wanting to do what Jeb was just talking about, shrinking the size of government, and they won't do it. They just literally won't do it. I mean, do you know how hard it was? I mean, last year we got the caps put in place for the spending bill, which was like pulling teeth to get high caps put in place. And we already busted the caps. They busted the caps within 2 months of adopting the caps. There is literally no hunger across the entire conference to do what we say we do, which is constrain spending. And you know, we're going to talk about tax policy. Jeb talked about tax policy. I bet most of your guests have been talking about tax policy. I'm a child of the 80s. I'm for, as I think Jeb was just describing, low broad tax rates. I want more money in your pockets. But let's be very clear. If you're not doing corresponding spending cuts, when you have tax reductions that aren't fully paying for themselves, they pay for themselves to a degree, what are you doing? You're increasing the debt. And guess what you're doing? When you spend money that, you know, we don't have and you're racking up more debt, you're increasing inflation and you're putting a tax on the American people. So it's a fake tax cut if it's not a high growth tax cut that's going to create wealth. Jeb alluded to capital gains changes and stuff like that. But we're just fundamentally not serious about wanting to decrease the size of government. The last point I'll make is, go look at, and I've put some of this out there, go look at all of the votes on the appropriations bills amendments last year. Remember in the speaker fight, we were making a case in the Freedom Caucus, we want to have votes on amendments, because we hadn't for like a decade. So we started getting votes on amendments. Go look at the votes. Go look at how many Republicans voted against the spending cut amendments that we would offer on the floor on appropriations. Go look. Just dozens of Republican votes against all of the spending restraints we were trying to put in place. So, you know, we're going to have to hit the gas when we get in there in January. We're going to have to actually fight to do it. But that was what the speaker's fight was about last year. And it did result in passing Limit, Save, Grow, which was the first time you had Republicans as a bloc vote for a debt ceiling increase in exchange for actual cuts. The problem was, is when the deal got cut last Memorial Day, which ultimately led to Kevin's undoing, that deal busted the caps, and that was the problem.
So, I mean, you get there, and you guys, particularly the House Freedom Caucus, gets vilified constantly for wanting to hold feet to the fire.
Right.
I mean, do you see any way forward to, because, I mean, like this morning we had a conversation on China, just how much China is buying up land and their state legislatures blocking, trying to advance to get them out. And I mean, a lot of people came away from the conversation thinking, oh my gosh, this is a terrible situation. Is it hopeless? I mean, is this situation hopeless? Or is the fiscal cliff gonna force us to do stuff?
Well, everybody had as guests have been talking about the numbers though now. It's a smart audience, you know the numbers, $35 trillion of debt. We're now spending more in interest than we're spending on defense for the first time in our history. We're cracking $1 trillion in interest. We're racking up $1 trillion of debt every 3 months. The fact is, there hasn't been the resolve to do it. And you say, well, is it hopeless? Here's what I would tell you. Until Republicans are willing to do what Democrats are always willing to do, which is risk your election certificates to change the country and change the trajectory of the country, then no, it'll never change. But we have to actually mean it. I saw yesterday, I tweeted something out and I got a bunch of Republicans mad at me because I tweeted out, because people said, well, Republicans aren't talking about spending restraint. They're not talking about limiting the size of government in any of their campaign stuff. I said, well, it's because they can't. They literally can't. They can't with a straight face because they're just as guilty. They're equally guilty. But this is the one message I'll say to all of the listeners and the viewers online and everybody in the room. You know what? It's everybody's fault. It's a reflection of the American people. Do you know how many groups I have in my office sitting there with their hand out? How many groups come in and say, give me mine? Oh, cut government, cut the size of government, but give me mine. Look, I'm telling you, you know, the piper's here. You got to pay the piper. We have now had a generational, probably now 2 to 3 generations of Americans who, with all due respect, have blown it. They've blown it. My parents' generation blew it. The Reagan generation, I call us, right, Generation X, we have a chance to combine with some of the younger generation to see if we want to actually have fiscal honesty and restraint. But when Ronald Reagan gave his famous speech in 1964, you always remember, right, the time for choosing speech, it was October of 64. 60th anniversary is this October. That's about a quarter of our country's lifetime ago, right? That wasn't a speech about choosing Goldwater over LBJ, was it? That was a speech about choosing a different path, choosing freedom, choosing limited government, choosing to avoid the siren song of whatever government can do for you. But we didn't choose the right path. With all due respect, we didn't choose it. We have been growing mandatory entitlement spending for now my entire lifetime. We have grown discretionary spending. We have grown every aspect of government. And we've put more and more of it onto mandatory spending. Did you know that every dollar we bring in revenue right now has to go to cover what is called mandatory spending? That means any of the additional government bureaucracy, all of the alphabet soup in DC, that's all debt, that's all borrowing. Because every dollar is already, you know, has to go to pay mandatory spending. So until we're serious and say, look, I mean, Rand Paul's been talking about an across the board cut for forever. It would do wonders for our economy and for the state of affairs if we just did that. He called it the penny plan. Now it probably has to be the nickel plan if you want to actually just reduce it across the board. But guess what? Then you'll be saying, oh, you're going to cut Medicare. You're going to cut Social Security. You're going to cut defense. You're going to cut veterans. You're going to cut the farm bill. Well, 80% of the farm bill is food stamps, right? At some point, we just have to do our job. I would vote for any of those cuts tomorrow and run the ads against me. That's fine. Like, leadership is actually supposed to matter. I'm just saying, if you don't have fiscal restraint, then you have a tax on the American people, you're killing the dollar, you're undermining our national security, you're undermining our economy, you're empowering our enemies. Maybe we should do something about it as leaders.
You mentioned our enemies. We've had a lot of conversation today about China and the frustrations that getting Washington to do anything takes forever, even as everybody seems to agree, the states seem to be faster. And Senator Scott was here just a little while ago talking about the absurdities of so many businesses hiding behind government regulations, for example, for getting our prescriptions for our military from China,
right.
Yet there are no government regulations. It's just people say government regulations as a coverall.
No, that's right. And I think, and I want to step onto regulations off of what I was just saying about spending, right? Because we want to figure out how we're going to get our economy in the right path, which has been in this kind of stalled state for a long time. And the best way to do that, and every economist that I've been talking to as we look ahead to next year, because everybody's talking about, well, what do we do about the tax cuts and the expiring? The real hindrance on economic growth in this country is the regulatory strangulation of the American people being able to go out and create wealth and opportunity. That's the main thing. And it's driven heavily by the climate agenda, right? And so, this is a variation of the question you're asking, the answer. But, when I say we need to restrain spending, there are ways to do that without touching Medicare benefits or Social Security benefits. We can restrain spending and cut the bureaucracy, hold that spending in check, grow the economy by unleashing the regulatory morass. But in order to do that, right, we have to be honest. You had 18 Republicans who just last week signed a letter to Speaker Johnson saying we shouldn't repeal the entirety of the Inflation Reduction Act. Now, you all remember the Inflation Reduction Act was the Democrat signature bill 2 years ago. And what does it do? It massively expands subsidies, 90% of which go to corporate billion-dollar entities. And those subsidies are empowering China, giving money to China, giving money to Chinese companies, giving China to great big green companies. And all of that is doing is trying to subsidize wind and solar and undermine reliable energy, that is clean burning natural gas, nuclear, et cetera. That's what's happening. But you've got 18 Republicans who are saying, oh, no, we can't touch that. And the likely Ways and Means chairman who the other day said, well, we need to defend the Inflation Reduction Act. Guys, if we have a $4 trillion tax bill, which is what we're talking about, we got to find a way to make sure that we have corresponding cuts. One of those ways is to cut the $800 billion of the Inflation Reduction Act. And if my Republican colleagues aren't willing to do that, well, I'm going to go to war with them. I'm sick of it, okay? I'm just going to be blunt. I have no problem, as we did in the speaker's fight, holding Republicans' feet to the fire. You know how many text messages I got from Republicans saying, oh, don't do it, you guys look like you're divided and all that. Guys, what good is it to just be the slightly less bad version of Democrats? It does us no good. So.
Yes. Something that's come up on stage, you and I have had this text exchange on defense of free markets and corporate wokeness.
Yep.
And one of the things that came up yesterday on stage is how so many Americans probably don't even know that the Securities and Exchange Commission, when it comes to Fortune 500 companies and others, is essentially pushing the activist investor takeover of these companies and embedding progressives within them, that we have an American bureaucracy that seems to be at war pushing the woke agenda as much as corporations, and if anything, encouraging them to.
Sure, I mean, the SEC is certainly a part of it, and we've got different bills and ideas that we can do if the Trump is to win and we take over the White House, things that we're gonna be able to do to try to rein that in. But the real problem is the actual corporate boardroom, right? The SEC and the government have some amount of influence on that, but honestly, it's just that we've been graduating radical progressive Democrats out of our business schools, sending them into the boardrooms. The boardrooms are now filled with them, and they're all making these ridiculously bad decisions, and they're using corporations to enact their radical progressive Democrat agenda to destroy America. And look, I'm not sure how to make it any more clear than that there is a war on your way of life right now. There is a full-scale war on your way of life, on Western civilization, on American values right now. And the people who claim to be standing up and defending against that war and to fighting for Americans aren't. They're not meeting the same force being applied to us. So the radical progressive Democrats are at war with your values in the corporate boardrooms, like Eric's just alluding to. They're at war with us in the universities, in the schools, in the elementary schools, right? I mean, I'm sure you've had panelists up here talking about the woke agenda. You've got all the individuals that are out there talking about what's been happening with the transgender agenda and, what they're trying to force feed into our kids. Now you see what's happening over the United Kingdom with all of the stuff with the hate speech. Now, I was the lead author of a bill to sanction the ICC for trying to declare Netanyahu a war criminal. Why? Because I strongly support Israel and believe that they need to stand up and defend themselves, and I'm not gonna apologize for saying it, I'm for it. But I was also in a block of conservatives who voted against the big spending bill in the spring that had the big block of money for Ukraine and the big block of money for Taiwan and had $4 billion that would go to fund Hamas at the same time the money was going to Israel. So I opposed it. And I also opposed the bill that was labeled the anti-Semitism bill to try to root out anti-Semitism on college campuses. Now, I want to root out anti-Semitism on college campuses. I held a hearing on it as the chairman of the subcommittee on the Constitution. But I oppose the bill for precisely what's happening in the UK right now, because they're going to come after you, okay? The UK is just slightly ahead of us, but it is gonna happen to you. If you dare criticize Islam, if you dare run afoul of the woke operatives in corporate America or in government or in schools, they're not just gonna shame you, they're not just gonna cancel you, they're going to arrest you. That's coming. You don't think it's coming. It's, well, we're in America. I saw these memes this last week making fun of the UK saying, man, 1776, glad we spun off and, you know, got our independence, so we're no longer under the crown. Aren't we great? And don't fool yourselves. That same movement is alive and well right here in the United States. And if we don't understand that and fight it and take it on, then it's going to come right at you. But yet Republicans, I mean, how many Republicans I'd sat on the floor of the House, I said, guys, you know this speech, hate speech kind of legislation is going to be used against us. And they'd be like, yeah, I know, but I can't vote against an anti-Semitism bill. But that's literally what we do all the time. It's like you package a bill, you put a name on it, and so people say, I can't vote against that. I mean, look, when you vote against virtually every bill, you give them just every opportunity to run ads against you and you just make it to where they have message discipline problems because you're a no on every single one of these bills. So they can't really attack you. But the point is, stop giving in to that and stand up to fight what we need to fight in order to preserve the country.
Well said. So as an aside, there was a time I was doing 6 hours of radio. I was having to do 9 to 3 p.m. and Chip reached out to my producer and said, you know, you can put me on. I know how to talk and give Eric a rest. And I feel like we're doing this here, which has been great. After 2 days of talking, I can toss to you and you can talk. So let me toss something else to you.
Yep.
On defense, I agree with you. We probably do need to make serious cuts. But also, the Biden administration, given the costs, given inflation, is actually continuing to reduce the amount of money we're spending in the military at a time China's on this massive buildup. How do we balance national security from the debt perspective and also national security from an actual armament perspective?
Number one, make the federal government focus on what it's supposed to focus on under the Constitution of the United States, which is securing the United States of America, both in terms of our military and our border. Frankly, don't do anything else. I liked America best when we had a secretary. Yeah, that's right. I liked America best when we had what? A Secretary of War, a Secretary of Treasury, a Attorney General, and a Secretary of State.
There was a postmaster too, but let's not mention him.
Four. What's that?
The postmaster too. Well, but let's not mention him.
You know, now that's just the Waldorf Hotel, not the Trump Hotel anymore. So, but I'm serious. So focus on that. Do your job. You're supposed to secure the country. We're not. Our country is not secure. Our military is degrading. It is woke. It is not where it needs to be. Our borders, wide open. You guys have heard enough facts and figures out in the world. You follow Bill Malugin. You've had guests, no doubt, talking about it. I could talk about it for an hour if you wanted me to. But you get the borders wide open and dangerous. Americans are dying. So they're not doing their job. We can do that. We can secure America. You can have a military. What? You mean we can't secure America and have a functioning, strong military, $900 billion? I mean, that's where we are, $900 billion. So my view, we need the strongest military in the world, bar none, and it needs to be sparingly used. That's what peace through strength actually is. And if you do that, you don't do what we did when we had 20 years of war in Iraq and Afghanistan, 20 years. We're still operating under the authorization of the use of military force from that time. They're still in existence. That is asinine. World War II came and went in how long for us, right? Roughly about 3.5 years. And we had 20 years of endless wars. Then what happens? You have all of the damage done to those great patriots who are over there serving in the Middle East for us. And then we passed a $600 billion mandatory spending burn pit bill, which is now going to continue to balloon the national debt. we owed our veterans coverage. I think that bill was not the way to do it, but we owed them care. But that's the consequence of these decisions. This is why I got to be honest. I favor some version of a war tax or war bonds or whatever whenever we have these bills and people put them on the floor to go put our troops in harm's way or fund Ukraine. So last year when I voted against Ukraine or earlier this year, look, I believe we should try to stand alongside Ukraine and Eastern Europe. I want to stand against Putin, but not with a blank check and not irresponsibly, not while you're not doing the energy policies you need to put in place to actually defend your own country. And so guess what? I voted against it. I had some donors and some people calling me and they go, Chip, you know, we're really concerned. You're tossing Ukraine aside. We got to stand with Ukraine. We got to stand against Putin. I said, okay, let me just ask you this question. Your top marginal tax rate right now is about 37%. I tell you what, I'll make your top marginal tax rate 60% for the next 5 years and we can have your war in Ukraine. Crickets. Crickets on the other end of the phone call. My point is this. Put your friggin' money where your mouth is. I'm sick and tired of politicians and frankly activists and pundits going on and talking about what we need do or not do in Ukraine. I'm not saying I'm gonna go spend another $175 billion to fund Zelensky's war, however righteous you think it is or not. And I guarantee you there's a division in this room. That's fine. But if you have to pay for it, do you think we would have passed it? Do you think last year we would have passed that bill if I said, sorry, seniors, you just lost Social Security this year so we can go fund Ukraine? And you say, but Chip, that's foolish. You got to stick your head in the sand. You're going to endanger America. No, we have to force tough decisions. Because if you don't force the tough decisions, then you're going to make bad decisions. And that's what I think we need to do. So I think we need to change that and flip the script on it.
I do want to talk to you about the border a little bit, because the last time you were on my program, while you were there at the border, you were watching people getting detained as they were coming across the border. It was a surreal experience. And I don't know that people, like, we can see the images, but even Dave McCormick was talking about being in Yuma, Arizona, and watching a bunch of people from China and Syria come across in the middle of the night. It is surreal to me that we probably have sleeper cells in this country because the Biden-Harris administration, the borders are, has just been negligent.
Well, this is what I want people to understand. This is purposeful. It's not just negligence, not to like take issue with your word choice. It's purposeful to remake America. That's what it's about. How many people here know that there are 51.5 million people in this country who are foreign born and that is the highest percentage in the history of our country? Shouldn't that raise some alarm bells? Does that raise some questions, especially when your schools are not teaching any of these children, or frankly, any of our own children, that America is great, that God exists, that the Constitution matters, that the Declaration matters, that unalienable rights matter? None of that's being taught. Yet we're importing millions legally. People always say, I love people coming up on the stage. I'm against illegal immigration, but I want more legal immigration. Go look at the numbers. We have still very high legal immigration, both in terms of how you compare with the rest of the world and our history. The fact is, this is purposeful, and the dumping of people into our country is illegal. So we'll talk about Georgia. Everybody knows the story about Laken Riley. She was killed literally by somebody who was released into the United States under parole, which is a policy that was supposed to be used very sparingly in unique situations on a case-by-case basis, and they have been doing parole categorically for hundreds of thousands at a time, millions of Americans, releasing them into the United States. And as a result, there are dozens, if not hundreds of examples of the Laken Riley situation. There's Lizbeth Medina in Texas. There's Rachel Moore in Maryland. There's dozens of examples of dead Americans because of this policy. The fact is, it's purposeful to remake the country. We could end it pretty quickly. You could end it with executive action, with the Remain in Mexico policies, and with something akin to the Title 42 stuff that was used during the pandemic. But mainly, you just have to say no, and you just have to turn people around. And that the executive branch can largely do, but we also need to pass the components of HR 2, which we got passed last year. Now, this is really important, because everybody said, well, what happened out of the speaker's fight last year? Well, by getting conservatives on committees, and by getting conservatives on the Rules Committee, and by putting us in the room to force decisions, we got the Limit, Save, Grow passed, which then put in place the path that we could have good policies put in place in exchange for debt ceiling increase, which then set the table for the caps. Now, the caps got busted, but we set the stage for caps. We passed HR 2. the strongest border security bill that we've ever passed in the history of our country. We were passing appropriations bill. We passed 7 out of the 12 appropriations bills. We were getting votes on amendments finally because we were demanding that. Now we've got Republicans who are complaining because they didn't like to have to vote on all of those amendments that we were putting forward to say, well, why don't you cut this? Why don't you do this policy? Let me give you an example. Last September, we had a provision to defund UNRWA. You guys know what that is, right? The United Nations Refugee Program, which has been used to fund Hamas for decades, certainly years. I introduced a bill 3 years ago to get rid of it. We offered an amendment last September, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks before October 7th happened. 8 Republicans voted against the amendment to strip the funding from UNRWA, which we knew was being used to fund Hamas. 8 Republicans voted against that and killed that amendment from passing in the appropriations bill. I could give you dozens of those examples. 18 Republicans, maybe 19, voted against an amendment to kill the kill switch, okay? The kill switch is something that now has a federal regulation that can shut your car down if they choose to. You ever driven those communist golf carts at some resort where you back out into something and they shut it down? That's what's gonna happen to your cars. Because they also have the tailpipe rule put in place, which mandates 2/3 of the fleet be EV by 2032. Do you guys have any idea what that does? I've talked to Toyota right there in Texas. They're gonna have to start their assembly line for that next year. If we don't win this election, you're gonna be driving cars that can't get where they need to go. They're gonna be massively more expensive. They're gonna be driving up inflation that the government can shut down at the flip of a switch, none of which is gonna reduce CO2 production in any meaningful way. While China has 1,100 coal-fired plants, we have 250, and we act like any of this is gonna dent it. When if you eliminated the internal combustion engine, you would maybe reduce CO2 by 1.5%. Guys, it is about control. It is about tyranny. It is about telling you what to do in some utopian, radical, progressive Democrat dream that is fiction, that is unicorn energy, but it's all about them being able to tell you how to live. And if Republicans don't wake up and fight that, you're not gonna have a country and your kids and grandkids aren't gonna have a country. That's what this election is about. It's not about all the noise. It's not about all the stuff you're seeing in the ads. It's about whether or not you believe in Western civilization or whether or not we're gonna save it. That's what's on the ballot this fall.
I think that's the perfect place to end this on. I know you've had a long, you got a trip and you left Karen the kids at home to come hang out with us.
I did.
And I really do appreciate it and your friendship.
I want to close on this note. Again, I opened with it. Eric is one of the best human beings I know in this business. I appreciate you all being here for him. Now, Christy is the one I really trust in the family, right? And that's who I like to call. But I am serious about that, and it matters, and it matters that Eric's voice exists, whether it's over the airways and radio or through the various channels he's a part of. And I mean it, and I do want to close because I'm ranting about a lot of the things that are at stake. I am bullish about what we can achieve, and that America can yet again still set that standard for the world. But we have to mean it. And the one message I've been delivering in Texas and anywhere I go, Young America's Foundation a couple of weeks ago, Young Americans for Liberty, the message I've been trying to deliver is, it is time to step up and everybody's going to have to sacrifice. If you find yourself saying, yeah, but I need X, no, you can't do that. Every single one of us are gonna have to step up and sacrifice, every single one of us, in order to save this country for our kids and grandkids. Because if they don't have this country, then they're gonna have no place to go when people like these judges and these bureaucrats and these tyrants in the United Kingdom are trying to put people in jail for exercising free speech. Or the 75-year-old woman in DC who was put in jail for 2 years for praying in an abortion clinic under the FACE Act and the abusive use of power by the federal government. And I could go through case after case. That is what is at stake. And I'm just honored to be here and honored to be here with my friend, and thanks for what you do to stand up against it.
Thank you. Thanks, brother. Thank you so much. Yep. Thank you. And thanks for the pop tarts.
Oh, yeah. That's your daughter.
Thanks,
guys.